The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter Number 5, Text Number 23, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari, recorded on September 1st, 2014, in Timișoara, Romania.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Namo
Bhagavan
Eka
Asa
Idam
Agre
Atma
Atmanam
Vibhu
Atma
Icha
Anugatau
Atma
Nana
Mati
Upalakshana Bhagavan Eka Asedam
Bhagavan Eka Asedam
Agra Atmatmanam
Vibhu
Atmechchanu Gatavatma
Atmechchanu Gatavatma
Nana Upalakshana Bhagavan Eka Asedam
Bhagavan Eka Asedam
Agra Atmatmanam Vibhu
Agra Atmatmanam Vibhu
Atmechchanu Gatavatma
Atmechchanu Gatavatma
Nana Matupalakshana
Nana Matupalakshana
Bhagavan Eka Asedam
Bhagavan Eka Asedam
Agra Atmatmanam Vibhu
Agra Atmatmanam Vibhu
Atmechchanu Gatavatma
Atmechchanu Gatavatma
Nana Matupalakshana
Nana Matupalakshana
Bhagavan,
the
personality of Godhead,
Eka,
one without a second,
Asa,
was there,
Idam,
this creation,
Agre,
prior to the creation,
Atma,
in his own form,
Atmanam,
of the living entities,
Vibhu,
master,
Atma,
self,
Icha,
desire,
Anugatau,
being merged in,
Atma,
self,
Nana Mati,
different vision,
Upalakshana,
symptoms. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead, the master of all living energies, existed prior to the creation as one without a second. It is by His will only that creation is made possible, and again everything merges in Him. This Supreme Self is symptomized by different names. Perform. The great sage here begins to explain the purpose of the four original verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although they have no access to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the followers of the Mayavad impersonalist school sometimes screw out an imaginary explanation of the original four verses. But we must accept the actual explanation given herein by Maitreya Muni, because he, along with Uddhava, personally heard it directly from the Lord. The first line of the original four verses runs, Aham evasam evagre. The word aham is misinterpreted by the Mayavad school into meanings which no one but the interpreter can understand. Here, aham is explained as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not the individual living entities. Before the creation, there was only the Personality of Godhead. There were no Purusha incarnations and certainly no living entities, nor was there the material energy with which the manifested creation is affected. The Purusha incarnations and all the different energies of the Supreme Lord were merged in Him only. The Personality of Godhead is described herein as the master of all the living entities. He is like the sun disk, and the living entities are like the molecules of the sun's rays. The existence of a Lord before the creation is confirmed by the Shrutis, Vasudeva Vaidam Agra Asit Na Brahma Na Shashankaraha Ekovai Narayana Asin Na Brahma Neshana. Because everything that be is an emanation from the Personality of Godhead. He always exists alone, without a second. He can so exist because He is all perfect and omnipotent. Everything other than Him, including His plenary expansion of the Vishnu Tattvas, is His part and parcel. Before the creation, there were no Karanavashayi, nor Garbhadakashayi, nor Chiradakashayi Vishnus, nor was there Brahma, nor Shankara. The Vishnu plenary expansions and the living entities beginning from Brahma are separated parts and parcels. Although the spiritual existence was there with the Lord, the material existence was dormant in Him. By His will only is the material manifestation done and undone. The diversity of the Vaikuntha Loka is one with the Lord, just as the diversity of soldiers is one with and the same as the King. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita 9.7, the material creation takes place at intervals by the will of the Lord, and in the periods between dissolution and creation, the living entities and the material energy remain dormant in Him. Vandeham Sri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Bhadijana Sahidam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesh Shunyavadi Pashyat Yadeshatarine. So, in this purport today, we read that before the creation, there was no Karanavashayi, nor Garbhadakashayi, nor Chiradakashayi Vishnus, or was there Brahma or Shankara. The Vishnu plenary expansion and the living entities beginning from Ma are separated parts and parcels. Remember, we read about living entities. Yeah. What is it saying? Yes. Before the creation, there was only the personality of Godhead. There was no Purusha incarnations and certainly no living entities. So one may wonder, well, how is this? Because it states in the Bhagavad Gita, Natvevahang jatunasang na tamineme jamadipa, never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, though all these living beings. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I and the living entities are always existing. And here it says, there was no living entities. Well, how to understand this? Did we exist or we did not exist? Did we come out of nothing? We come out of Krishna, we were non-existent and not became existent? No. This is talking about the material creation. The living entities are existing, but they're not manifestedly existing. The conditioned living entities are in an unmanifest state, merged into the body of Lord Mahavishnu. So they're existing, but in a dormant condition in the body of Mahavishnu, in that period in between the dissolution and the creation. This is what we're reading about here, you see. That period. We're not talking about there was no Radharani, there was no Balaram. That's not what's being stated here. This is talking about the material creation, not the transcendental world. You have to understand this distinction, not get confused. The devotees in the spiritual world, the Vrijavasis, the Vaikunthavasis, they are eternally going on in loving relationship with Krishna. This is talking about the conditioned living entities and the expansions of the Lord who are engaged with the material nature. Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Chirudakshaya Vishnu, they are manifested at a certain point. Of course, Mahavishnu is eternally there, but according to this, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Chirudakshaya Vishnu, there's a certain point where they're not actually manifest. But it's interesting here, even Mahavishnu is included in this list. That's an interesting one to ponder. I can easily understand Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and Chirudakshaya Vishnu. They come out when there's a creation and they come go back and we read how everyone's merged into Mahavishnu. But now we're seeing even Mahavishnu. That's an interesting point. We'd have to do some further research and contemplation how to understand Mahavishnu's position. Because he's the one that lies down in the corner of the causal ocean, corner of the spiritual world, and manifests everything out of himself through the yoga nidra. How he's also not there. I don't understand that one yet, but we'll keep our eyes and ears open to try to understand this aspect of the philosophy. We also hear this idea of one without a second in the Brahma Samhita. Ekopyasa Rishavitang Jagannandako Tim. Also in that the following in verse text 33, Advaitamachuttamanadamananta Rupam Majang Purana Purusham Navayovanamsha Vedeshadur Lamabador Lamamatma Bhakto Govindamare Purusham Damahamajami. I worship Govinda, the Prime of the Lord, who is inaccessible to the Vedas, but obtainable by unalloyed devotion of the soul, who is without a second, whose form is not subject to decay, is without a beginning, whose form is endless, who is the beginning and the eternal Purusha, yet he is a person possessing the beauty of a blooming youth. So this verse also says the same things. He's one without a second. But that doesn't mean that he's the only living entity that exists, the only living being that exists. It means that no one is on his level, you see. Krishna's position is very, very unique. Krishna is the emanator, the absolute emanator in everything else that exists. Even the Vishnu tattvas, they are all emanated, you see. Krishna has his integrated parts and parcels, the Vishnu tattvas. He has his separated parts and parcels, the jiva tattvas. So we share that nature with Balaram and Radharani and all the Vishnus. They are also emanations from Krishna. We are emanations from Krishna. They are also emanations of Krishna. But the difference is we are integrated. They are integrated, and we are separated. We are called Tathasta Shakti. Many people are bewildered. I get this question all the time in my e-course. How could the perfect living entity in the spiritual world ever fall down to this material world? People are bewildered how that could possibly happen. I mean, I get this question hundreds of times. How the perfect living entities... But it's very simple to understand. Because Jivara Svarupa Hoi Krishnara Nityadas, the constitutional position of the living entities, he's the eternal servant of Krishna. But the second half of the verse says the living entity is also Tathasta Shakti. So try to understand this Sanskrit word Tathasta. You see, this will give you a clue to understand how the living entity could fall down. Tata means the border. Sta means situated. There's so many stas. It's like this is a microphone stand. You see, microphone stand. Or you have Rajasthan, the place of the kings. Or you have Afghanistan or Uzbekistan or Pakistan. So many stands are there, you see. So you also have Tatastan or Tatasta. You see. The one who is situated on the border. Now that is not, in the case of the jivas, that is not a physical location. It's a state of consciousness. If I said, well, if I told you, you know, I'm from the border. That's where I was raised, I grew up. That's where I'm from the border. Oh, really? I'm on the border between Hungary and Romania. Okay. All right. Which side of the border was it? I wasn't either side. It was the border itself. I was living on the border. Well, how thin were you, sir? How thick is the border? The border has no thickness. It has length. But it has absolutely no thickness. So you mean to say you were squeezed into the border with zero width? Well, your house was situated on the border. Well, okay. Which room were you in? You see? The border went right through the middle of my room. Which side was your bed on? Well, it was right on the border. Well, you had one hand on, in one hand in Romania, and the other hand in Hungary. Then, you see? It's not that you can actually physically live on the border and not be on either side. You understand? So to say that we're Tathasta doesn't mean that we were... It's not a place where you can actually live. It's a state of consciousness where you can go either way. Prabhupada compares it to the beach, the shoreline, you see. There's a shoreline. You can go say, oh, here's the shoreline. You go back an hour later, the shoreline's in a different place, isn't it? Where the water touches the land, it's the shoreline. An hour later, because of the influence of the tide, it's in a different place. So what was under the water is now dry land. It's always changing, you see. So the living entity, he's like on the tide is there. He sometimes can be in Krishna consciousness and sometimes in material consciousness. That's why he's called Tathasta. He has a borderline consciousness. Actually, he's an eternal resident of the spiritual world, but he has a borderline consciousness. Why, one could ask? Why does he have a borderline consciousness? Why would Krishna... Is that an imperfection in the Lord's creation? Some argue it is. That he has a borderline consciousness is... Krishna blew it when he, in his creation, he gave the living entities a borderline consciousness. Well, if you don't have such a consciousness, it can go either way. What does it mean? If you don't have a choice whether to serve Krishna or Maya, what does it mean? It means you are a psychological kidnappee. You're a prisoner, you see. You're a brainwashed zombie. You're a robot. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. You're a robot, you see. If you're programmed that you just do whatever Krishna wants and you have no free will, you see, then if I picked out a nice wife for you, you see, and wanted to get married, or a husband, you know, but it was a robot, would you accept it? It's a really good-looking robot, you know. Who wants to have a loving relationship? You can't have a loving relationship with a robot. There's no rasa there. There's no sweetness. It's just a machine. You see? So, Krishna wants rasa with us. He's called Rasa Raj, the king of rasa. So just as he wants to enjoy unlimited tastes, you see. Sometimes we have that experience of many, many tastes. It's the more the tastes are, the more it becomes opulent. Just like one time I was with Tomal Krishna Goswami on his Vyas Puja day in Fiji, where they really know how to cook. They really know how to cook in Fiji. And so they made for his Vyas Puja feast 1,008 preps. 1,008 preps. And he tasted every one of them a little bit. Actually, we had a row. The God Brother, he was here, and the God Brother was down a row. So he, these little, like, you know, little dishes, 1,008 dishes came down the conveyor belt. And everybody, we all took a little taste. And we went down, we passed them. We all took 1,008 preps together. Now that's a feast. 1,008 preps, you see. So the more there's variety of taste, the more it becomes, the more it becomes festive. Festive, notice the connection between the words feast and festive, you see. There's eating, and then there's festive eating is called a feast. The more preps, the more of a feast it is, you see. So, Krishna, he's the supreme feaster. And he feasts on loving relationships. It's not a carnivore, he doesn't eat us. But he feasts. His food is the loving relationships with his. Of course, he takes prasadam. You know, he takes very nice prasadam. But what he relishes the most is his loving relationship with the devotees, more than the eating. You see, he relishes the loving relationship with his devotees, and therefore he has. How many devotees does he have? Well, if you could, the more the merrier. The more you can have varieties of rasa. The more you become, it becomes festive. So Krishna is the supreme, enjoys the supreme festivity of having an unlimited number of jivas with which he can experience an unlimited variety of rasas or flavors. In other words, each living entity has his own distinct characteristics. You will not find two devotees who are a clone of each other. Every single devotee, you ever seen snowflakes under the microscope? You ever seen? When I was a kid, we studied it in school, in elementary school, in our textbooks. And we saw that every single snowflake has a different design, a different pattern. There's no two snowflakes that are exactly the same. So, just as there are no two snowflakes that are exactly the same, there's an unlimited variety of snowflakes with different patterns. Similarly, there's an unlimited number of living entities, and each one of them is distinct and unique. There's nobody like you. There's nobody like you, you see. You are unique in all of existence. There's nobody that can be you. You can only be you. Nobody else can be you. And you have special qualities, a special taste, a special flavor that Krishna can enjoy in a loving relationship with you that no other living entity can give him. That's why if you remain in the material world as a rebel against the Lord, you are denying him enjoying you. You are meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. That's why you exist. So you're cheating Krishna if you remain in this material world as a so-called enjoyer. Aham bhogi, you see. You're cheating Krishna. So don't be a cheater. Don't be a rascal. You see, this is what the acharyas are telling us. They're telling us, don't be a cheater. Don't be a rascal. Stop denying Krishna your association. He wants your association. Stop denying Krishna your association by being a foolish idiot in this material existence. Yes, I am great. So in this way, we have to understand the science of bhakti. This is not some sect. This is not some brainwashed cult. This is the supreme perfection of existence being taught here by Srila Prabhupada. And we have to realize the true Atma Tattva, the science of the self, and actually be who we really are. One time I was challenged by a puffed up atheist. We were in the getting ready to leave Fiji, fly back to LA. It was the middle of the night, Air Pacific. It's a big, huge queue. All the tourists coming back from their Fiji vacation, going back to the U.S. Big, huge queue. It took forever to check in. And finally we got through the queue, and I came out after checking, and there was an atheist standing there with a big grin on his face. He saw me in my devotional attire. He's ready to smash a religionist. He said, "What's your philosophy?" He was ready to jump on me, you know. Boom. And I said, "Know who you are and be who you are." He couldn't say a word, you see. What gentleman would object? "My dear sir, would you like to know who you are? Because if you find out who you are, you will achieve unlimited opulence. Would you like to know who you are? If you find out who, actually you are the owner of the greatest treasure, my dear sir. You are the owner of the greatest treasure ever discovered in the history of the universe. You're the owner of it, but you've lost access because you forgot who you are. Would you like me to tell you who you are?" "Sure." Is it? So who can object to actually knowing who they are? Do you not want to know? You don't want to know who you are, right? Do you know who you are? Do you actually know who you are? You see? So in this way, our philosophy is perfect. It's not some weird cult or some strange religion from India. This is not from India. This is not Indian dress. This is Vaikuntha dress. We're not trying to be Indians here in Timisoara, Romania. We're not trying to be Indians here. We don't care about India. The only thing that interests us about India is our Vedic culture was predominant. That's India was the home of Vedic culture. We're interested in Vedic culture, not Indian culture. You know. Of course, at one time, Indian culture meant Vedic culture. And that's of interest to us. But nowadays, Indian culture is quite different from Vedic culture. Now, you know, chai tea, you know, Bollywood movies, you know, biddy, all this junk, you know, rickshaws, you know. And that's modern day Indian culture. We're not interested in Indian culture. We want Vedic culture. So this Vedic culture is the perfect original culture of the living entities in the spiritual existence, and it was also manifested here in the holy land of India, and it's manifested in the higher planets as well. That's why Sanskrit is the lettering for Sanskrit is called, of course there's many different ways it can be lettered, but the current lettering system is called Devanagari, which literally means in the cities of the demigods. Because Sanskrit is spoken in the heavenly planet. This is the language of the heavenly planets and the language of the spiritual world. So the more you can associate with Sanskrit, it's very good for one's consciousness. Anyway, our time's running a little short. Any questions? Yeah.
If we are on the border and we have a choice, What happens with the internal energy of the Lord?
What happens?
Do they have a choice to choose the external energy or the internal one?
Who?
From the internal potency of the Lord. So we are on the border, so we have a choice to choose.
Every living entity is free. It's not that the... everyone is free to do what they want.
But they never choose anything else.
The Nijasiddhas never come to the material.
Do they have a choice to choose what
they
want?
Anybody can do whatever they want. No one is a slave of Krishna, a robot. Everyone, but the Nijasiddhas, they never come to this material. They never, like Radharani, these great devotees, they never come to the material. Although our great devotees who were fallen souls, like Narada Muni, he was a fallen soul. He was a rock star on the heavenly planet. What was his name in the Bhagavatam? Upabarhana, I think, was his name. He had all these women followers who liked his singing. He would sing these lusty songs, like Papa's, like cinema songs, and Papa mentioned. And so he had all these lusty women followers, and he came to a Sankirtan festival of the demigods. They were chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord. He came there wanting to sing all these cinema type songs with all these female followers, and they cursed him to become a Shudra. They were so disgusted with this character, you know, singing these lusty songs with all his female followers, you know, like the Beatle, like a Beatle or something, you know. And they cursed him. You become Shudra. So that's what happened. He became a Shudra. This pop star on the heavenly planets became a Shudra on the earthly planet. But he was blessed by, during the Chaturmasa, the sages were, they... during the Chaturmasa, they don't travel, they stay in one place. So they stayed nearby his home there in the forest. And just by the mercy of these great sages, the Bhaktivedantas, Prabhupada called them, by the association of these, by serving them, taking the remnants of their food, he became a pure devotee, just by a small child. Just by taking prasadam and serving these great personalities, he became a pure devotee. He became the great Narad Muni, one of our sampradaya acharyas. You see, from a degraded, lusty character, pop singer, he became a great acharya. Anything else? I don't know if I really answered your question, but I did? Okay. Anything else? Yeah?
Yes, I have a question. Related to the borderline. Yes, I stay on the borderline. This is the borderline.
This is a state of consciousness now. It's not physical.
Yes,
not physical.
Yes, I understand. Okay. So, this is the material world, and here is the spiritual world.
No, we say material consciousness and material consciousness. One doesn't physically reside there. It's a state of consciousness. The living entity is situated originally in the spiritual world in Krishna's pastimes, but he has a consciousness which can go either way. He's not physically living on the border. He has a consciousness which can go either way.
Okay, so the consciousness can go or is here, and you are conscient of this consciousness, where it is, here or there. I don't know.
The living entity is a lover of God. But if he wants to, he can become envious of God. You see, that is the difference. You either love God or you're envious of God. That's the difference. He can be a lover of God or he can be an envier of God. That is what it means, the tasta. His consciousness can go either, he can be a lover of God or he can hate God. Why he's the Supreme? Why he's the Supreme? Why not me? You see? That's what it means, the tasta. He can appreciate Krishna or he can hate Krishna. That's tathasta. He is a consciousness which can go either way. Is that clear?
Yes, but Andrea 2 days ago ask you a question like, how is the envy in the spiritual world? How is the envy in the spiritual world?
There is, of course, there is transcendental envy in the spiritual world. That's different. There's two groups of gopis, Radharani's gopis and Chandravali's gopis. The right wing and left wing gopis, you see. And they're competing. They're like transcendental envious. Who can get Krishna's attention more, you see? But no one is envious of Krishna. If you're envious of Krishna, you're not in the spiritual world. And that envy of Krishna doesn't exist in the spiritual world. If you're envious of Krishna, you're already here. You're not there. You see? You can't be, and there's no such thing as being envious of Krishna in the spiritual world. So if you're envious of Krishna, you're already here. You're not there. As soon as envy manifests, you're not there anymore. You're already here. Is that clear? If you're a lover of God, you're in the spiritual world. If you're a hater, an envier of God, you're in the material world. Immediately. Yeah.
Radharani has a choice to envy Krishna, love Krishna, or envy
who?
Krishna. Radharani.
Or Vishnu Tattva. Radharani is not a robot, but she would never... It's impossible she would ever be envious of Krishna. Impossible. She would never do that. Although she could, but she never will. I mean, she's not a robot. She's not a slave. She's not a machine. She can do whatever she wants, but she never will do that. She never does that, will never do that. Absolutely not. Not possible. She will ever do that. She will never ever leave Krishna. Not impossible, absolutely impossible. She could, but she never will.
If she is not a robot, why are we not like this?
Why are we like this? Why are we different from Radharani?
Yes, why
aren't we like Radharani?
Yes. Why not? Well, you can become like that if you want. You can become one of Radharani's assistants. You can become like them. Totally dedicated to Krishna. No more falling down. That's your choice. Yeah, why? That's an interesting question she's asked. I'm also wondering the same thing. Why we're not all like Radharani that never falls down? Well, the free will has to be there. It goes back to the whole question, how divinity can fall down. It goes back to the same question. But here's another way of looking at it. What is the? This is a mathematical way of analyzing it. For scientific-minded people, you know. What is the odds of? Let's look at it this way. There has to be some chance of falling down. Otherwise, there's no free will, right? You agree? Has to be some chance of falling. What would the chance be then? Considering how wonderful the spiritual world is, how terrible the material world is, what would be the chance of a perfect living entity in the spiritual world falling down? It'd be the smallest possible mathematical chance, which is 1 divided by infinity, correct? It has to be 1 in infinitesimal. The smallest possible number is 1 divided by infinity. Okay? That's the chance a living entity could fall down. 1 over infinity. Because it'd be just inconceivable that, you know, how could anyone ever do such a thing? To leave the spiritual world? The pastimes of Krishna? It has to be there has to be some chance, otherwise if there's no possibility to do that, there's no free will. And the possibility means there has to be some degree of probability mathematically, you see. Probability means we're entering into the realm known as probability statistics. So there has to be some degree of probability. It'd have to be the smallest possible number, 1 over infinity. So you take the infinite number of living entities who are there in the spiritual world, there's an infinite number, and say, okay, of these infinite number of living entities, and you take a probability of 1 over infinity that one could fall down, what's the math on that? 1 over infinity times infinity equals infinity. An infinite number of living entities fall down, and that's what happens. Even though it's infinitesimal fraction of the infinite number of living entities in the spiritual world, there's also an infinite number of living entities in the material world. It's mathematics. It's all just math. Pure mathematics. Can't argue with mathematics.
There's no mathematician here to argue with me.
Well, I'm lucky. But if I had Sadaputta here, he could help me out. He's a PhD in mathematics. If I had Sadaputta here by my side, I could take any mathematician in the whole world. Yeah, I'm not a... I made straight A's in math in college, but I was never a... I didn't major in math, and I took a few math courses. I'm not a master of mathematics. I know a little bit, but not much. I know that a line has no width. That I know. It has length, but it has absolutely no width. It only has length, a line, a border. Huh?
As it is said that in the spiritual world, 1 minus 1 equals 1.
Yes, that's a fact. In the spiritual world, what does that mean? And that means Krishna can extract from himself another Vishnu Tattva form, and Krishna has not diminished in any way. That's what it means. Arya can subtract an infinite number of living entities out of, extract an infinite number of jivas from himself without being diminished in even the slightest degree. That's the meaning of 1 minus 1 equals 1.
Wouldn't it apply towards the living entities also? If one is there, it's just the same still there. And living entities in the...
I don't follow.
If you minus one living entity from there, still it remains there so many living entities and so many living entities in the material world.
You have a question?
Yeah.
What is the question?
The question is that wouldn't it apply towards the living entities also? If you extract so many living entities from the spiritual world, still there is so many spiritual living
entities. Yeah, the spiritual world still has an infinite number of living entities. But I tell you this. It's not that they're impersonalists. They're missing all these living entities. They feel real, you know, that it's not that they don't care. They're callous. You know, let them rot. They deserve it. No. They're very much desirous, and they become very joyous. When one jiva returns back to Godhead, it's a huge festival in the spiritual world. Ah, come back. It's a great moment. Krishna actually personally greets that devotee. Prabhupada said we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual world. So you think about all the different ISKCON centers right now, you know. And I think, what's the biggest ISKCON center? Maybe Alachua or the biggest number of ISKCON devotees, I'm not sure. Maybe Pune, who knows. But eventually the biggest ISKCON center will be ISKCON Goloka Vrindavan. Because so many devotees are going back to Godhead, you know. Just imagine all the ISKCON devotees will greet you when you come back. An ISKCON devotee has come back to Godhead. All the ISKCON devotees come out and greet the ISKCON devotee who has now come back. Prabhupada is there. The ISKCON devotees are... I can just imagine. Prabhupada is there. All the ISKCON devotees are there. When Krishna is there. Lord Chaitanya, the Goswamis. But what a glorious thing to return back to Godhead. That'll be the day, I tell you. That'll be really the day. Some devotees are so addicted to preaching. They love preaching so much they don't want to go back until the whole world has become Krishna conscious. I met one book distributor. He lives all alone in a van. All alone. He drives around in a van and he goes out all day distributing books. He's intoxicated by book distribution. And he says, I feel guilty when it's to go back to my van and take prasadam and take rest because there's so many people that don't have books. how can I go think of eating and sleeping if there's so many people who don't have books yet? This is his meditation. And his heart, his feeling, his mood. He wants to take birth after birth until everybody has Prabhupada books. Just an amazing devotee. I'm just awed to talk with him. He really feels this way. This is amazing. He feels he's already in better than Bhakta Godhead. Just being a book distributor here on the planet Earth is better than being Bhakta Godhead. That's how he feels. Just imagine the ecstasy he's feeling every time he distributes a book. I remember when we were doing a Harinam party. This was years ago when book distribution was just starting. In the beginning, they used to say going on Sankirtan means going on Harinam. We didn't call it Harinam in the beginning. It was called Sankirtan. Time to go on Sankirtan means go out and chant and dance all day and distribute a few BTGs along the way, you know, while you're just chanting and dancing. That was what it used to be. And then book distribution took off like a rocket from San Francisco. They came back from called Harinam Sankirtan. They were short of gasoline, so they bargained with the gasoline attendant. You take this Krishna book and give us a tank of gas? He said, sure. So maybe we can sell these things. They couldn't think of, you could never sell a big hardbound book. You could only sell a little magazine for a quarter. That's what everybody thought. But then they realized you could sell these things. And it took off like a rocket. And San Francisco was the place. That was the mecca of book distribution. They just come. That was the place. San Francisco was the cynosure. That was the chakra. That was the place. And some San Francisco devotees were visiting Miami. We were doing Harinam on one side of the street. They were doing book distribution on the other side of the street. And I saw this brahmachari, he's dressed in his dhoti and everything, you know. He distributed his Krishna book to somebody and he was dancing in ecstasy. After distributing the book, but he was dancing in ecstasy. I distributed a Krishna book. He was so ecstatic. He just spontaneously was dancing in ecstasy. So, anyway.
So the time's going up.
Time is running over, so we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada flooding the whole universe with an ocean of ecstatic Krishna prema ki jai.
Shri Shankar Shankar Prabhu ki jai.